approval of the agenda. I would do that by consent if I hear no other. Approval of the minutes of the meeting of April the 12th. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
I don't have a vote.
You don't have a vote? Okay. Mr. Acosta? the first item is the vital sign scorecard. Andrea?
Good afternoon. Andrea Burnside, Chief Performance Officer. Next slide, please. Here today to talk about the results of our vital signs performance. And when I talk about year to year, what we're looking at is the first quarter of this year as compared to a year ago, the same quarter, same time frame. Next slide. So obviously the vital signs is a very detailed report, 26 pages, not only of charts and graphs and trend lines, but also explanations of why our performances change and what we're doing about it. So it's a lot of information to kind of condense for you all. So what I've tried this month is to take a look at, if I had to tell you what are the key things I'd want you to know about our performance, what would those be, kind of in a couple messages. And so after I talk about those, I'll go into kind of more detail on each of the messages. So first of all, we met or exceeded our 2011 on-time performance results across all modes. Again, that's kind of comparing the same quarter this year to last year. Preventative and corrective maintenance has been netting results for us. Moving to a challenge area, our rail car doors are creating some ongoing challenges for us with regards to rail car reliability. And then finally, safety and security continue on a path of improvement. So those are kind of the key messages for the first quarter. In terms of meeting or exceeding on-time performance results, we look at rail. We outperformed last year, and granted, only by a half a percentage point, but that's actually pretty significant because we did that in more challenging conditions, and kind of to explain what that means. So we're not really comparing kind of apples and apples. It's a little bit different this year. We've had more, number one, we've had more delay minutes, and particularly in January, we had four cracked rails, broken track part, the frog, and you all know about the friction ring challenges. We've also been doing a lot more single tracking. The track work has greatly intensified this quarter as compared to last year. So last year, we were doing a lot of track work kind of in the late night time frame. Now we're really doing it at all non-rush hour workday periods, so middays, early evenings, late night. So there's a lot more track work. We did take a spring break, as everyone's aware, but in January and February, there was a lot of track work going on prior to the spring break. And this is at multiple locations in the core, and since the core has more service that's more frequent, it has a bigger impact on on-time performance. So the challenge will be as we go forward to continue to maintain on-time performance in these intensifying track work condition environments. The other thing that we've talked to you in the past about that impacts on-time performance a little bit is when we get new operators because they're getting used to driving the trains and sometimes every stop, you know, an operator being a little more tenuous about it, it does add up. So we have some new operators coming on board in May and June, and that may slightly impact our on-time performance as well. On the bus side, we are on a par with last year. I think it's the same performance. And generally, I would say January through March tends to be historically high on-time performance only because congestion generally in the region is a little lower. So we tend to experience every year a little bit higher on-time performance in that time frame. But I really have the same message in terms of not really comparing apples and apples because the environment that we've been operating the buses in has been more challenging this year. Basically, we've experienced 29% more incidents than we did last year. We've also had double the number of detours. So last year, where we had 164 detours that we had to deal with related to things like road construction and construction projects in our service area, we went from 164 last year to dealing with 381 this year. What BUS has been doing is realigning the service operation managers, given kind of these disruptions and delays and challenge areas to make sure that we have people on the street to keep the buses on time. They're also investing in what they call an on-time performance center. So they have some folks together really focused on our headway adherence routes and using technology to try to manage on-time performance. And I think they're looking to expand those techniques as we go forward and provide more resources because it has been successful. Access on-time performance, Christian already talked, Mr. Kent talked to you a little bit about that in the prior presentation, so I won't say too much about that, but we are above last year and also above the target. Moving to the next message. Oh, sure. A dedicated vehicle is not a taxi, I believe, not the taxi service. Next slide, please. Oh, okay, so these are just the charts that are out of vital signs. You can kind of see the trends and the comparisons. That's rail at the top, bus on-time performance, and then metro access. Okay. So the next key message was that our preventative and corrective maintenance is netting results. And if we look at the escalators availability, it is up 2% from the same time period last year, and we are on target. And this is largely a result of something we talked to you about before, which is preventive maintenance practices, doing a better job at that, better work planning, really, and also we've just been doing more modernization of our units. So preventive maintenance is up 49% from last year. I think wrote it down on a little note. Last year, our preventive maintenance during the time period was 58%, and this year it's 86%. So that's 49% improvement. So the proactive approach we've been taking to maintaining the escalators has really improved kind of the baseline condition of the escalator. So when there is an unexpected repair needed, it takes less time to complete the repair because we've already been doing kind of a lot of the baseline work. So the mean time to repair, which is another measure we look at, has been 29% better this year. And our modernization, as I said, are up. It accounts for about 34% this year of our out of service. On the bus fleet reliability side, that's a real good number. We've exceeded last year and outperformed our target, even though we increased the target, if you recall. We went from 7,400 miles between failures to 7,700 miles as the target. And January and March, again, as with bus on-time performance, tends to have better performance for bus fleet reliability, and that's because there's less condensation in the air and water is sort of bad for electrical parts, so generally tends to be better in the time period anyway. Going forward, we'll continue all our corrective actions and our preventive maintenance and expect to see the fleet reliability continue on a positive pace for bus. Okay, next slide. So the next message was that rail car doors are creating ongoing challenges for us. So kind of good news, bad news. The good news is that if we look at the chart a little bit later, you'll see reliability has steadily improved in the quarter, so it's on an upward move for rail cars. The bad news is that it's overall, on average, 7% worse than last year. And rail car problems have contributed to more delays in our service than it has last year, and I think equates to about 17% more. On the doors, they relate to two-thirds of the delays on our 2 and 3,000 series cars, and about half the delays on the 6,000 series are door-related. So we put... Go ahead.
Since doors, big focus here, I wanted to kind of break it down, and we've got really four major modifications that are affecting doors at this time. We've got a relay exchange where we're basically installing a brand new product. It's an upgrade. 40% of the fleet has been replaced that's impacted. This is about 550 cars plus. It involves basically modifications to over 2,000 relay circuits. So that's kind of the size and magnitude, but we should be done with that by June of this year. Software modifications. We've got a couple of more software revisions that we're looking at this stage. All of those should be in place by November of this year. The overall impact is probably not as significant as what the relays are. We really expect to see that to help us out. We've also got some other door operator brake units that control of the overall closing, the last sequencing of how they close and how they secure themselves in place. And all of the modifications and stuff will be done by October of this year. So we do have some very substantial initiatives that are taking place. We're also looking at a maintainability perspective. It's some of the hardware and stuff on how it wears over time. Of course, we're having to work with our vendor out of Austria. They're the ones who have provided this, so that's going to be a few years out. But the previous three items, as it just relates specifically to doors, is a huge issue. And then some of the other areas for reliability of the fleets, compared to this year to last year, we're now at a point where we've replaced over 90% of the 2-3K air compressors to a new oilless air compressor. So we should be finalizing that. So we're starting to see an uptick in our performance of that. And then the 1000 series, where we have some faults with our braking and such, we're putting in a new auxiliary power supply system that basically will keep everything charged the way that it should and much more robust. And the vendor is now in the process of delivering about 30 units a week. So by late summer, early fall, we will have all of those things modified. And that's just to kind of give you an idea of the massive efforts that are being invested into the fleets, which should start proving themselves in the number on the HVAC effort, as well as far as our modifications and stuff, as far as upgrades, getting ready for the summer months. Those are right in line for us to get those things completed as well.
Okay. So I don't need to talk about that. He's obviously given you all the detail on that. The next slides are really the trend line charts out of vital signs for escalators, buses and rail fleets. And the next message, next and final message from the performance this quarter is that safety and security continue on a path of improvement. Looking at our customer injury rate, it's slightly better than last year, and it's better than target, so that's good news. It's largely driven by lower injuries on access, as well as on rail in our parking facility. Our injuries are up slightly on bus related to some preventable collisions that we've had in the quarter. Some of the things we're doing is the safety officers are really out in the system a lot, doing audits, looking for hazards, and taking action on those things. And we have had some safety communication campaigns with our customers that seem to be paying off. The other issue, I guess, would also be that we've had a very warm winter, and I think people slip and slide a lot when it's icy, and we haven't had that issue as much this year. Looking at employee injury rates, they are also better than last year, and particularly in January, we had 14 fewer employee injuries than we did last year. Safety Department has been conducting what they call body mechanic classes. So a lot of our injuries are related to kind of people lifting things and straining and hurting their backs, and we've seen quite a significant reduction in that, given some of the classes that have been held, and we hope to continue to see that. Also, we're kicking off a safety communication campaign aimed at employees and properly using their personal protective equipment and other safety actions they should be taking. We've been doing some health and safety fairs out at the bus and rail divisions, and so the good news is those actions are having effect. And finally, the crime rate trends. Parking lot crime significantly down, 53% from last year. And I think there was a picture up there earlier of the gator. So there's a lot of really effective tactics that the police have been putting into practice, patrolling on the bikes, using the gators in the stations. They've put up variable message signs in parking areas, kind of telling people to make sure that they secure their items in their car. I think we've talked to you in the past about they kind of walk around the parking lot looking in people's cars to see if they're leaving things out, and to the extent they see someone leaving valuables out, they look up their license plate, send them a letter saying you might want to think about, you know, taking your cell phone, hiding it under your seat or something. So all those things are really paying off. The rail crime rate, station crime rate is up, and that is really kind of on purpose because we've been doing a lot of on-the-spot arrests by plainclothes officers. Decoys, I guess you call them. And really there's, the snatch of electronic devices has been a big issue, and the decoys have been really successful. So whereas we had 14 arrests for those kind of things last year. We had 128 such arrests in the quarter, so you can see that's a huge difference. And I was reading today even some of our some Good Samaritans are running after people with phones. Not that we recommend that, but there's a lot of action related to snatching of electronic devices.
Do we know what the rate would have been or would be if you discounted the decoy arrests?
I don't have that right here, but we can get that to you.
You got it, yeah.
Yep.
I don't have it personally. You want to show it? I can get it.
Because just thinking of that difference between 14 and 140, we might actually be below last year.
Absolutely.
For apples to apples comparison. Yeah, great.
Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Hines.
You know, the other question with this, it's great work here. The question is punishment. You know, we arrest them. I lost the right word, but, you know, conviction. There we go. So it's 2:45. but we talked about that one other time, that we don't have a real great conviction rate on some sorts of things, but it would seem to me if we're the people being stolen from, maybe the conviction rate goes up. I'm just curious, Chief.
Well, again, it depends on the respective jurisdiction. So we follow the court procedures in those jurisdictions. Some may have a more stringent prosecution approach. Others, because of the volume, they may look at some of the small things as time-consuming. So it depends on the jurisdiction.
I guess let me just put my jurisdiction's hat on and say, if there's any way that we can facilitate conversations with magistrates or whatever, let us know.
Absolutely.
But I would also say that
they're pretty stringent in the Commonwealth.
Never been an issue.
They hang them. They hang them. Yes, Porter.
I just wanted to say how much I appreciate the format of this report. I found it very easy to sort of glean the main points out of it, and I like the way you started off with the main points and then put the data under it. I found it very easy to understand. I appreciate that.
Thank you. I'm glad that strategy works, so we'll continue that next quarter. So in summary, we're continue to use performance information to guide our decision-making, and I think it's showing up in our numbers this quarter. Any other questions on the
any
data?
Any other comments?
I had a quick question. Now, getting back to rail fleet reliability, I noticed that your target for mean distance between delays is at 60,000, but last year we've never even were close to that. Was there ever a point in time when we were hitting 60,000? I'm just wondering how we set that target and what we're trying to achieve with this.
The legacy target.
I'd say it definitely is a legacy target. It's something that was here before I had arrived. So we've just kind of left it in place and been more focused on just the overall improvement, of trying to get it, up. But it seems to be a common buzz phrase. So I do know that whenever we had a time to spend for the 7,000 series, whenever it arrives, it'll have a much different target and much different goal and objective because that ties more into the contractual requirements this time around, where they typically had it a little bit beforehand, but it'll be much more stringent. So once we kind of get all these major components and stuff done, we'll see what type of reviews and stuff that we need to reevaluate.
We should do a lot better than we're doing.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah, I mean, you can contrast it to a bus where I talked about we change the target on bus because we buy new buses all the time, so we raise our target. We don't really have, besides the maintaining the fleet, we don't replace our rail cars that often. So
I could share this whenever I got here, whenever we had the ability, for example, to run more like Consys, where instead of having to belly the 1000 series, it was a 1 to 1.5% improvement on-time performance. So whenever we go through the effort of being able to replace the 1,000s and not having to belly all of this equipment and stuff, there's a positive byproduct and stuff that would take place. But until such time, that's why the focus is so aggressively on individual fleets and stuff at this point in time, because we're having to deal with the hand that's dealt with us at this time frame.
I'd like to make a comment that I'm actually appreciative of the ability to make or exceed your performance targets, sometimes if it's only by a percentage or so, it shows long-term results about specific performance that the customer truly cares about. And the story is that this is all beginning to pay off for all of the pain that our customers go through about service interruptions and getting new equipment and change in procedures, that there is the beginnings of a long-term trend, I hope, about increases in the agreed-upon performance criteria that we've said that we are going to measure ourselves by. So I want to congratulate all of you about this kind of level of achievement about performance. And I know that the general manager increases performance targets every year as part of a stretch performance process. So if you all keep making the general manager's stretch performance criteria, we'll all be in much better shape in that over the next couple of years. So this is good news, and I want to recognize it. So thank you all. And I also agree about the format. I think this is a really good format.
Thank you. Great. Any other questions? All right. Thanks very much.
Next is Rush Plus. Ms. Rush Plus. And I got one of these.
Coming to
there
a
you go.
Game.
Put it on your back.
You.
Put it on your chest.
Please, you should do it.
My car.
Cool.
It's like a bullseye, right?
That's right.
That's right.
Is there a way for the triple
bar? Mine's all weapons training.
Otherwise, I'll come over for
cool.
Okay, good afternoon. I'm Tom Harrington from the Planning Office and the coordinator for Rush Plus. I'll start with a kind of overview of where we are in a lot of the preparation tasks, and then Barbara Richardson will go through our communication strategy that you may have seen. So today we're going to talk about Rush Plus, and as you may recall, this was approved by the board in October under a different name, the Blue-Yellow Service Realignment. So we have a new, maybe easier to remember name for our service change coming Monday, June 18th. Next slide. Just as a refresher for everyone, the service change we're talking about affects the rush period only on weekdays. And that time period in the morning is basically 6:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m., although there's a little bit of ramp up and ramp down in that at the end of that time period. In the afternoon, it's 3:30 p.m. to 6 p.m. There's no there's no service changes outside of the rush period. So the off-peak service change service pattern is the same as we have today. During that rush period, the main elements of the service change are that three trains per hour that currently leave Franconia Springfield as the blue will become a new yellow line service from Franconia Springfield to Greenbelt in both directions. And then we're adding three trains per hour to the orange line. And I should note one change from October. At that time, we envisioned the service being West Falls Church to Largo. You'll note in looking at the operational details, Vienna was a more efficient way for us to do it. Basically for the same service hours. So the service will be primarily Vienna to Largo, except for at the beginning and end of the rush period. Okay, next. One of the key ways that we're informing customers about the service change is through the map. As you're all aware, we had a new design, and it was released to the public. And in fact, we'll be rolling these maps out shortly. So the maps actually go in two main areas, and actually many more of them go in the rail cars than in the stations. We have two designs that go in rail cars. One is a standard system map, and the other is our emergency evacuation chart that has the system map superimposed on it. In addition, all the mezzanines and platforms have a backlit system map. And as listed here, installation is actually underway. In fact, the first maps have already gone up at the New York Avenue station, now becoming the Noma Gallaudet station. Those will happen kind of over a rolling period up till June. Recognizing that that could be confusing for passengers, we're adding a label on there that says basically this service change is effective June 18th. So, and as we go into talking about signage, again, I think the issue here is it's a pretty massive change to both the map and the signage. It would have been great if we could do it all the weekend before. It's just not going to happen that way, given the size and scope of this very big installation process. So, as we've talked about before, we're updating a whole range of signs used for wayfinding, particularly the station ahead list, outboard signs, tactile signage, and pylons. So the signage will start being installed this month, but will actually last over a five-month period. We've broken the signage into two main phases, really, those signs that will be up before June 18th and those that will be up after June 18th. One particular note, the tactile signage will be installed system-wide by the opening date, so that was a priority for us that we're moving ahead with that. In addition to the Rush Plus changes, this is our chance to also implement the station name changes through signage. Noma Gallaudet is the first one that went up, in large part because of the wayfinding issues. It was such a significant change that we had to get that up as the map was being deployed. Navy Yard Ballpark and King Street Old Town are in design, and those will be up basically this summer, but that is kind of in the phase two. The map, the next slide, please. And this gives kind of an indication of sort of those stations that we're calling phase one and those that are phase two. But as you can see, the priority were those stations where a new service color is being introduced, getting those signage changes up in time, as well as major transfer points. And then basically the remainder of signage would be basically over the summer. Just to keep in mind, I think we're all aware, we also have a fare change coming at the same time. These are basically the same sign folks working on the fare changes, this map, and so all this work is being scheduled kind of in a very compressed time frame. So that's another element of our scheduling. And then just kind of hitting on some of the other main aspects of preparation. We've had training underway with operations personnel really since January, basically with station managers and train operators undergoing regular training. We have an employee toolkit that gives them all the information on the change to make sure everyone understands it. In reaching out to the accessibility committee, one of the items they highlighted was the need for train announcements to be very clear. Recognizing that the PID signs, train displays won't work for everyone, particularly those who are visually impaired, so train announcements will be a critical wayfinding tool. In terms of the rail service scheduling, it's definitely underway, and in fact, operator assignments will happen in late May. The testing of the rail information systems included the destination codes and the rail operations control system. PIDs have been tested and updated, and then the trip planner updates will take the schedule information and be available in June. And then finally, in March, you all approved a bus service change, adding a new bus service from Crystal City to Roslyn, and that scheduling change is basically being implemented as we speak. So that will be up and running in time. So next, Barbara will talk about communication.
Okay, so just as a refresher, the communications plan is designed really to speak to customers as individuals, meaning to give them specific information about changes that are going to impact them rather than to talk about it globally for what's happening overall in the system. It's to provide the explanation specifically in, as I mentioned, by line, but also in the venues or the formats that they wanted. So there are a lot of different channels that we're pushing out information because people take it in differently, but in particular we know that being in the stations and on the vehicles is really key for our customers.
We're talking about the benefits in the information that we're preparing, and it's actionable information, things that they can do or they know or need to know about. It's in three phases. In April, we were in what we call the buzz phase, creating some curiosity, and just getting kind of the logo and the name out there to get people to start chattering or talking about it and looking for it. We are now entering the learning stage where we are putting out very specific information. And then we will go into June 1st, we'll go down to the countdown phase where we're literally count down by the days to the change. Next slide. So as I mentioned, there's a lot of information that's planned for in the system. We have station signage that we're using. Hopefully some of you have seen the floor graphics. We have some banners out there. We have posters. We have some rail cars, which I'll talk about. So we're getting it visually, but also we're going to use street teams. So we are going to get information to people literally in their hands as well. We're using the Metro Alert system. So on the social media side, those that have signed up for Metro Alerts are getting very specific information about their lines and stations. We of course, have refreshed our web a presence there, and we have special web pages for this Rush Plus initiative. We've recorded over 30,000 visits to those web pages so far in our efforts. And we're also working as we develop, and we have new things happen with the media to get information to them. Community outreach is part of the whole Metro Forward. When we go out and talk about our progress on Metro Forward, Rush Plus is a big part of what we're talking about as well, because it's an increase in service for customers. It's a customer improvement. And we're constantly listening to get feedback on the messaging. And in particular, I would mention that we did do some testing with customers in focus groups on the messaging to make sure that we were talking not in operation speak, but that we were talking in customer language. So we took our cues from some of that and incorporated it into our materials. So in April, we had branded rail cars that started. I don't know if you've had an opportunity to see them. There are not that many. It's almost like Where's Waldo, but we did it so that people would say, what is that? What's going on? And we did a little contest with it, sort of spot the rail cars. There's a set of 12 of them out there that are around the system. We have the floor graphics in the station that are almost like the footprints that lead up to the big logo for it. And in all of that, we put the date and we direct people back to the web page for more information. We also have had some just sort of teaser advertising. Again, it was just with the look and just trying to get people to have some curiosity about it. In April, we have created videos that are, there's one umbrella video that captures everything all together, that was released in April, and so far we've had 12,500 viewings of this video. We've pushed it out through Metro Alerts and, of course, announced when it was available and for release, and with the chair's permission, I'm going to show you if the technology works.
Expanded rush hour service is coming to Metro. It's called Rush Plus. And beginning June 18th at many stations, it means more trains and new travel options during the busiest travel times. This expanded rush hour service means more trains and more seats on the Orange Line, fewer transfers between Greenbelt and Franconia Springfield, and much more. Metro is also preparing for future Silver Line service and responding to changes in ridership by adding trains and adjusting service. To make this happen, some Blue Line trains will be transformed into Yellow Line trains, resulting in more direct service to downtown D.C. and Maryland from Virginia stations south of the Pentagon to Franconia Springfield. What does this mean for you? First, customers on the Orange Line west of Roslyn will see 6 additional trains every hour of every rush hour. 3 trains in each direction. That means thousands of extra seats during rush hour to ease the phenomenon known as the Orange Crush. But take note, these new Orange Line trains will travel to and from Largo Town Center, not New Carrollton. This new rush hour only service will be shown as a dashed orange line on the new Metro map. Next, Metro customers north of Mount Vernon Square on the Green Line will now see 6 Yellow Line trains each hour of every rush hour, 3 trains in each direction between Greenbelt and Franconia Springfield, giving customers who transfer today the option of a transfer-free commute and more frequent service overall. Yellow dashed lines will indicate the rush hour-only service on the new Metro map. To help Metro Rail customers navigate with ease, Metro maps have been updated to reflect the new rush hour service. Knowing your destination is the key to a successful ride. Check the digital destination sign on the side of the train for digital information signs on the platform. Listen to the announcements by the train operator to confirm the destination. Thank you for riding Metro as we continue to make your commute a better experience.
Okay, so in May, the month that we're in now, we now are distributing individual videos. So there's one specifically for Orange Line riders and so on. And also, when we don't have a graphic here, but I would encourage people to take a look. But when you go in and you click on a particular page or you go to our map, it's an interactive map. So if you're on the Orange Line, if you want to see what's going on there, you can slide over it and you'll get the information there. So as I mentioned, we have all those different videos that we're going to be pushing out, and we started this week, and those are the taglines that we've used to get people's attention to the service change. Also, if not this coming weekend, the next weekend, we had such a great success with the cherry blossoms on the fare gates. We are going to use our fare gates to call attention to the change as well. So we'll be putting up these stickers on the fare gates again. We will also have the station announcement start May 21st. We've been working closely with Dave's group on all of this. We're closely partnered, but in particular on announcements, reviewing operator announcements, reviewing station announcements, going through them very closely to make sure that what we're saying is clear for customers. We're also recognizing that some people like to have a piece of paper or something in their hands. We've produced a brochure that we will be distributing in the commuter stores. We're also thinking about our bus customers. Bus cards are going into the buses, both in English and in Spanish. On the special service, the 9E and 10E, we will also be distributing take ones at the Roslyn, Crystal City, and Braddock Road stations. We'll also have those available at the commuter stores. Before I started talking, we found a perfect space in Crystal City Station for a banner. We're thinking about that, and also Jack Reek was, some of the bus supervisors will be meeting some of the buses and distributing handouts as well. So, of course, we have some advertising planned as we get closer, and we're continuing to send out emails, and the jurisdiction staff has been helpful to us, and will also push out the emails for us to the respective lists, too, so that's great. In June, the big countdown begins, as I mentioned, so it's almost as though, you know, the drum roll starts and we'll start counting back, we're planning to issue rider tips, sort of rider tips once a day as we get closer through the 18 days. We'll also look at refreshing some of our signage. We'll do them for 3 weeks. They'll be at 4 different stations each day, so they'll rotate around the stations that are particularly tricky changes, the blue, yellow in particular. And we've changed up our advertising a little bit to go directly into the neighborhood newspapers. So we'll be in some of the suburban and neighborhood papers. For those of us over in Northwest, we'll be in the Current, for instance, or over in the Virginia suburban papers, so that we're, you know, at people's doorsteps with that in the neighborhood where they, you know, was of interest to them especially. And then we have some diversity advertising that we have planned, the Korean Times, the Epic Times, El Tiempo, Washington Hispanic. We're also looking even further about maybe doing some inserts to reach those audiences. We're working with the Civil Rights Office to get information to churches and some other forums to reach to try to reach deeper into different audiences. And then our street teams, by the way, won't stop on June 18th. That's the last thing I'll say, is that they'll still be out there after June 18th, recognizing that not everybody, it just doesn't happen with the flip of the switch in one day. There will be people who will not be aware of it. So that's what we have that's out there rolling and underway right now. Next slide.
Just to wrap up, one additional thing to highlight after the service begins is really a period of monitoring, particularly passenger loads and trip patterns, because one of the reasons we're implementing this is to see how customers do react to this type of change in anticipation of Silver Line. We did a survey of riders on the Blue-Yellow Line in the fall of 2011. We'll do one fall of 2012 after the service change, just to see whether we've had the changes we expected. Thank you.
Very nice presentation. Any comments or questions from the board? Mr. Giancola?
Good job.
Thank you.
Mr. Downey?
Yeah.
Question about the PIDs in a station where you may have, I'm thinking of McPherson or Farragut North, where you will have Blue Line and two versions of Orange Line. What will the display be? Next train is blue, or next train is orange, and it'll just be the destination. So you, people have to look and read closely and also check when the train itself comes. It won't say orange plus or anything on the display.
No.
Yeah, got it. Okay. In terms of implementation, I guess one other thing to plan for is the people who screw up. Mm-hmm. That's, I think, especially the station managers, where someone may have overridden into the line that they don't expect to be at, sort of how to guide them back to where they need to be for back, you know, kind of backing up and getting to the right place.
Yes, absolutely. There's, again, as Barbara noted, we're, it's down to the way that we're even structuring the verbiage on how they make the announcements now. Sometimes less words is better, and also the cadence in which they even start the sentences is what we're looking at. The other component, what we're also very concerned about, and not in a negative sense, but that's also ties in with our shift pick. So all the training and stuff that's in place, if you were a station manager at X, you could, you know, pick someplace else. Some other steps that I've also undertaken is I've... Yes. But I have taken liberty to meet with the union as well as the president directly, and we've given her presentations and stuff on this. And so it's part of our regular correspondence because we did shift a lot of equipment and stuff around, you know, behind the scenes, which disrupts operators, even their reporting locations and everything else. So a lot of this planning and details, we're taking it, and we truly understand that the regardless of the media and stuff that's put out there, the station announcements are going to be critical. The announcements inside the train, the way that the station managers conduct themselves, and also the groups that are going to be out there whenever we first implement this service, is going to be key to get off to a good start. And so that's where our energy and focus, and Barbara and them are doing a great job of the build-up, but we're also focused that we've got to follow through.
Ms. Hines?
You know, I was on a train this morning where the person was clear but so soft that it was really difficult to hear them over the announcement. But anyway, the thought I was having as you were talking, Dave, is there any way we can encourage customers to give commendations to the people who are really clear? You know, can we say, you know, if you've got a great announcer, send us in their car number, or if the station was really great, you know, just send us an email and say, you know, Firgit was awesome this morning or something, so that we could start really honoring the people who are doing it well and making a little buzz around that. Because, boy, when you get somebody who's good, but you may not know how to share the fact that that person was really good. So it's just a thought, but, boy, it would help.
I can say one of the things that we've done is that we do get, you know, positive feedback from, you know, the reports and stuff, either internal of staff or from customers and stuff. And one of the things that we have done leading up to this is as we were looking at these announcements for the operators that were very successful, as we reviewed the packets and everything else, to say, well, if you had to do this all over again because of the change and everything else, what would you recommend? And as I noted, you know, cadence is very important. So if we have really long stuff, they kind of blurb it or you go very fast. But if it's very exact and concise when it leads in, it has to basically almost, I guess, like a better phrase, it almost has to be kind of like a command. And the vernacular has to be very strong. And so that's what we're looking at. And, you know, that's our intent. And it's proven to be some very interesting discussions of how we handle this. And sometimes less is more. And that's one of the things we keep going back. Because if it's so complicated, nobody can understand it, then we truly won't succeed. We can always build up and improve. But if we're not doing our basics well, we're going to hurt ourselves.
Any other comments?
If I may, before you hit the gavel.
Okay.
To respond to Mort's question before on the crime rate, the chief got the information. Part one crimes in the metro area would have been above 7. The rate without the arrests, it's down just above 4.
Good point. And I also am reminded that there's a customer feedback item coming to a committee meeting near us soon, and it might be a context for some further conversation about Mary Hines's suggestion about commendations and as well as secret shoppers, online posting of commendations that are quick and easy. And
yeah. I hope to, in June, come back with a significant presentation by Barbara and the other ELT. All our customer service initiatives based on the research we've done, both with focus groups and initial findings of the mystery shopper.
I look forward to it. And hearing no further comment, I would thank the board for their patience, the staff for their patience, the audience for their patience, and would adjourn the committee.